It's that time of the year when people do lots of things that they can only do in summer, and unfortunately one of them is protesting in the forests. The Bob Brown Foundation are up to their old tricks again.
Yeah, that's right. It's really disappointing. They were out some coops in the East Coast. They're just very good at lining up their protests with other things. So there was a protester documentary called Wild Things was screening in Hobart. So I think it was all part of the promotion of that that documentary. Bob Brown rocked up there one day and got himself arrested, and it seemed like he didn't get enough publicity, so he went out there again the next day and got arrested again.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very good at it, very good at getting attention. But the thing that I thought was pretty hypocritical was that two Greens members, so Cassie O'Connor and Nick McKim, showed up at that coop and also protested. And the reason I say that that's hypocritical is because during the whole forest agreement debate, that they literally approved the logging of these coops because these are in the permanent production zone. So they seem to have forgotten that in either the heat of the moment or don't really care, and the protest and the visual effect of that protest is more important to them than actually remembering that it was them who said those particular coops could be logged.
It, permanent production zone, which means that it's regrowth forest, doesn't it?
Yeah, but also, you know, the state went through a pretty long and tedious and hard-fought process to work out the areas in the state that can be logged and the areas that will be protected. And so there were areas added to the amount that's protected in the state. So there's half of the state is in some form of reservation. And yet, and the result of that was areas like the coops that they were protesting in were set aside specifically for logging and ticked off and approved by legislation that the Greens voted for. And they seem to have forgotten that, and they're out there protesting, saying, "No, well, actually, you can't log in these areas as well."
And wasn't it last year that the government actually strengthened the laws on protesting in workplaces? It doesn't seem to have had a great effect at this stage, does it?
Well, that legislation, the government brought that on, and it got through the lower house, and then they've just stalled it. They've stalled it for well over a year, no doubt waiting for maybe the upper house elections in March before they bring it to the upper house.
Oh, sorry, hasn't got through then yet, no.
No, it hasn't. Right. They haven't brought it on for debate in the upper house. Now, this is the same piece of legislation that was ruled unconstitutional by the government, by the High Court of Australia, and they came back in with 18 pages of amendment. So, but the thing is that there are rules at the moment that could be enforced and they're not. Like, workplace standards should be out there when they do these protests, because they do stuff that's quite dangerous. So they run out when there's machinery operating, and if one of them had an accident, got run over or squished or whatever, it would actually be the logging contractor that would be in trouble.
Yeah, and imagine how that'd feel too. I mean, you don't want to carry that around with you for the rest of your life, do you?
Absolutely not. And they do dangerous things as well, like stand on log piles. These log piles aren't that stable, and if a log pile gives while they're, you know, standing on it getting their photos taken, then it could be a disaster. And the other thing that they do is they climb up trees that when there's been a number of trees harvested in a coop and there's a single tree that's standing by itself, they climb up it in a tree sit. Now, that tree hasn't been exposed to wind, and so it's been protected by all the trees around it. If you remove all the trees around it and a gust of wind comes along, that whole tree could come down, yeah, including the protest.
You don't know how stable the root system is either in those circumstances, so it is very dangerous.
That's right. I mean, people have a right to protest, but, I mean, I think I've highlighted the hypocrisy, but also they have to. I think that they should be doing it in a manner that's not dangerous to themselves.
Yeah, indeed. We've spoken about the Northwest Sale Yard on a number of occasions. We know now that it's up and running in Smithton and it's doing quite well. But one of the good things to come out of it recently was that they auctioned off a steer with the proceeds going to charity, which was terrific.
Yeah, it was. So at the first sale that they had in Smithton, they auctioned off a beast that was generously donated by the Porteous family. And there was some quite strong bidding, and I think it got up to something like $4,600 for the steer.
Goodness.
So half the proceeds went, community sale yard decided to give half the proceeds to the men's shed. So there's the Show Society and the Stanley Chamber of Commerce have been trying to get a men's shed up in Stanley. So $2,300 went to them. And then the other half went to the Naked Farmer Charity, which works on improving farmers and people in regional areas, improving their mental health. So it was great, and it was fantastic that this is an organisation that has grown, has, I mean, we go back and the original story, but this was a sale yard that people said, or people in government and some players in the industry said that the industry didn't want, didn't need, and the community would be better off sending all their stock into the one sale yard left in the Midlands. Well, not only has the sale yard been a success, but they've managed to raise significant amount of money, which they've donated to local charities.
Yeah, so fantastic. It's a win-win, isn't it?
Awesome story.
Yeah, yeah. Terrific. Yeah. Finally, Shane, I know we've spoken about this on a number of occasions, and people are probably sick of hearing about it too, up to a point, but it's now 4 months since the government's set a task force aside to decide where the next spirits will be built, and looking at the possibility of parts of them, or if not all of them, being built in Australia. And they said it would be 4 to 6 months before we would hear from the task force. Well, that 4 months is up, so are we any closer to hearing from them? Have you heard anything at all on the grapevine?
Not really, but it's actually 6 months.
Is it right?
I think probably later on in January will be 6 months from when they announced the task force. So they said 3 to 6 months, so they're getting well and truly to the end of it. But no, I haven't heard anything. The government have been fairly tight-lipped. But the big question is when can a ship get delivered? At the moment, I think it's sort of holding back investment in regional tourism. Like, if there were new ships on the way, we'd know that it would be a fantastic thing, and that gives businesses confidence to invest. And that report from Saul Leslake said for every year of delay, it costs the state's economy $350 million and stopped the creation of 6,000 jobs. So it's something big, and we saw when the first spirits came online in 2002, it made such a huge difference to the state, and especially the northwest.
Yeah, and I think they cost about $320 million, and you mentioned the figure there of $350 million. You'd soon recoup that if you had them online earlier, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but it would just give a massive boost. And we know what happens when we get more tourists into the state. They have a bit of a look around and they go, gee, Tassie's not too bad, and next thing you know, they're coming here, they're buying houses and buying businesses, and it just lifts everything. And we know that the visitors that come on the Spirit in their cars, they stay longer, they spend more, and they get out into the region.
And the real estate agents will tell us now that there's a lot of people from the mainland since the pandemic that are seriously looking at moving to Tasmania.
Yeah, we're hearing stories all the time, and I know when I go out door knocking that, you know, you quite often you run into people who've just moved into the state, and they do it for a number of reasons. The sea change, tree change, but they also do it because it's stinking hot on the mainland, and they can't stand, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of 40 degrees, or they just feel safer in Tasmania after the pandemic. We're an island, we're that extra plane flight away from major centres, so maybe that makes people feel a bit more comfortable as well.
I think that's what we're hearing anecdotally from real estate agents at the moment, which is good. Shane, thanks so much for your time as always, I appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you throughout 2021.
Yeah, thanks very much, Martin, appreciate it.